Hello, this is Paul Green, political analyst for WGN Radio and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today we had Alexandra Holt, who's the budget director for the City of Chicago, who was there along with the mayor. And Alexandra talked about how the budget for finally is beginning to see some light. She discussed the fact that the structural deficit is down to $137 million, that they're no longer using one-time revenue to try and balance the budget, and most importantly, at least from my perspective, that three of the four pension funds are now taken care of. They are balanced in the sense that there is a pathway to solvency on all three of them, and the fourth one should be done this week. All in all, it was the first time we had an uplifting message from anyone dealing with the financial situation of the City of Chicago.
So we found the 200 people that are riveted by budget, city finances, right here. Thank you. We're going to keep you guys locked up in a room. Thank you, Jay, for the introduction, and also for allowing Covenant House to also have a few moments, and look forward to their opening their doors and helping us meet an obligation we have as a city to make sure, like our veterans, nobody will call Lower Wacker home. We got to make sure our kids also have not only a roof over their heads, but all the services that are needed to help them get on the right track in their life. This is a fitting time to introduce Alex Holt, the city's budget director. I say that because a lot of times we always think of the fiscal issues or the financial issues that look at the city as the economic toolbox. And that's not how we look at it. It's a tool in our toolbox of creating jobs and economic growth, but it is not the toolbox. And I say that because this morning IBM came out with a report, and 2 years running, Chicago's the number one city for direct foreign investment, which helps. It is also the only city in North America on the top 20 cities worldwide, and it has more direct foreign investment than Miami, Montreal, and Atlanta combined. So it's a significant statement about the confidence people have in the city and its economic future, and the best way to solve the problems we're going to talk about, or the challenges we're going to talk about, which are different today than when we were back in 2011 and 2012, is the idea of growing the economy, creating jobs and economic opportunity, because that is a significant contributor to a way to address the financial challenges. Now, overall economics, I believe in what I call the four T's: talent, transportation, technology, and transparency. And if you make investments in your skilled and educated workforce, in your transportation system, in the availability and capacity of your technology, and in the certainty that comes with government, the private sector is going to have the confidence to invest in a city that's not only going to look at its future, but shape its future. And you go back 5 years ago, Chicago has tremendous strengths to its economic portfolio. As I said, just take the education. 35% of the people in the city of Chicago have a four-year college degree or better. In the United States, it's 27%. We have more institutions of higher learning than any other city in the United States but Boston. More people right about this time of year, not only from our institutions of higher learning, but from the University of Michigan, University of Wisconsin, from Notre Dame, come and start their career when they graduate here in the city of Chicago. I mean, I often say around this time of year, between Madison, Wisconsin, and Chicago, do not get on the highway, you'll be roadkill. That's also true about Ann Arbor. It's true about South Bend. And that skilled and educated workforce, an aviation system that's unparalleled in the United States, keeps Chicago at the top of its game. But if you go back to 2011, the biggest thing that was a dark cloud over the future of the city's economy was our fiscal picture. And that tool in the toolbox was actually hurting all the other elements of our city. And we worked systematically to the point, and I don't know if you saw this on Friday, but as Alex's office reported, the structural or operating deficit for the city of Chicago today is the smallest it's been in nearly a decade, reduced by 80% since the day we took office. A far different picture, and, you know, and Alex and the whole economic team rejected those who, coming out of the recession, said what you should do, raise taxes, as if there was no reform to be done. Also, those who then, on the other side of the table, who advocated just cut government without regard that people in different communities are affected by government in different ways. Mm-hmm. And through going literally line by line, asking tough questions both on the revenue side as well as on the operating side, making fundamental changes. Today, we have the smallest operating annual deficit in nearly a decade, reduced by 80%. And for the first time, you can actually see the other side of the riverbank and make it towards that riverbank. And three of the four pensions that were also not in good shape now have not only a funding source, they're on a 40-year arc to making sure that our commitment to the people, whether they're police officers, firefighters, or laborers, can be met. And the fiscal picture of the city of Chicago, while not done, is much stronger. And a glaring or, in my view, powerful example of all the work that Alex and the team have done is the fact that take today our health care costs, our health care budget is flat to where it was when we took office or our first budget in 2012. And I would challenge anybody here from the public sector or the private sector that could look back at your health care costs over the last 5 years and call them flat, the health care budget as flat. So that, to me, is an example of what Alex has done and her team. Now, Rob, about this time, we start our planning for the next budget. And we sit at the conference table. And I always like to, don't get so silent, it's not that great a story, guys. In about August, Alex starts in a gray outfit. And as we get closer and closer to that budget, it becomes all black. And I like to always joke with her and tease with her. I said, oh, this looks like it's going to be a great day today, Alex. So she has done, and never, I will also say to all of you, the city's finances has never been in better shape since Aaron, Alex, and Carol are both the make up the financial team of the city of Chicago. It's all in women's hands, so we're in great hands. That's first time ever for the city. Now, that said, I do want to say I can't say enough about Alex Holt. She has been a committed public servant. It is not easy both getting three or four pensions right, literally reducing the annual deficit by 80%, being a very dedicated public servant who has gone through the budget line by line. What can we sustain that allows us to both reform the fiscal picture without upsetting the economic growth strategy? And her commitment to what she does, her commitment to her colleagues and her and the folks that work in the budget office, and her commitment to making the changes necessary for the long-term financial and economic sustainability of the city of Chicago. We, as citizens of the city of Chicago, are well served by her spirit and commitment to the future of this city. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Holt.
Okay, so maybe y'all don't need me anymore. I think I could go, right? Thank you, Mayor. Much appreciated. And I also want to really say thank you to the City Club for allowing me to be here today to talk to you about the city's finances. You know, we went back and looked, and I was last here just over 4 years ago. And when I came to address the City Club last time, it wasn't such a rosy picture. The city's finances were in a very different place than they are today. We had a structural deficit that was over $600 million. We had one-time revenues that were being used to fill the hole, and they were masking the true cost of government. In addition, scoop and toss and the city's other debt management practices were adding more and more expense to the city's credit card every year. And then, as the mayor mentioned, in 2011, there was not a sustainable funding or benefit reform plan for any of the city's four pensions. And as I talked about at that point in time, we had a lot of hard work ahead of us, a lot of difficult decisions, but all of that was going to be necessary to address the legacy financial liabilities that the city was facing and to make fundamental changes to the way the city managed its finances. And all of this was critical to Chicago and critical to all of the things, the economic growth and the other things that the mayor mentioned. But today, in contrast, I get to come back to you guys and actually talk about some fun stuff. And some serious progress that we've made over the last number of years. Now, you know, fun, that's the budget office's version of fun, right? I'm not sure any of you all might think it's fun, but any case. So we're now in a position where the structural deficit has been decreased by over 75%. And we are looking forward to the time in the next couple of years when balancing the city's budget is not about the structural deficit. It's about only balancing towards our normal cost growth, the year-over-year growth that we expect to have. One-time revenues are no longer used to fill the hole and to pay our bills. And on top of that, we've reformed our debt management practices, and scoop and toss is going to be phased out by 2019. And then finally, and I think in some ways one of the most important factors, is the fact that three of our four pension funds now have a balanced funding solution, and we're in the process of working on a solution for the fourth and final pension fund. So, you know, when we think about all of that, we think about the fact that in every facet of the city's finances, we are much better off today than we were 5 years ago. When we think about the hard work and the difficult decisions that have been made over the course of the last 5 years, all of that really does become evident in the city's annual financial analysis, which we issued last Friday. So the annual financial analysis is a document that the budget office puts out every year. It presents a holistic picture of the city's finances. It projects the gap for the coming year, and it really is for us the start of the budget process. And for those of y'all who have a bad case of insomnia, it's great bedtime reading. Although, again, being budget office, I actually think it's kind of entertaining and interesting. But again, we'll move on. You know, when we think about that, when the annual financial analysis for 2017, we're facing a shortfall of $137.6 million. That is significantly smaller than it has been in a very long period of time, the lowest it's been since 2007. When the lower, certainly much lower than it was in 2011, when we projected that when the city had an operating deficit of $654 million. And I think you can see from the slide up there the progress that we've made over the course of the last 5 years. And as I said before, this is a 75% reduction in a five-year time period. Now, we've achieved this reduction through savings across government, revenue growth from the city's strong economic performance, and some new revenue sources as well. While revenues have been part of the picture, savings and efficiencies have been the place that we've gone first. And in fact, when you look at all the actions that we've taken over the last 5 years, there's been $640 million worth of savings and efficiencies across government since 2011. Some examples of that include 2,600 position vacancies that we've cut for a savings of almost $200 million. We've put into place apprenticeship programs, competitive bidding, work rule changes, and other collaborative agreements with our friends in labor. That's resulted in $50 million worth of savings. We have energy savings from energy efficiency and smart energy purchasing that's produced $20 million worth of savings. As the mayor mentioned, our health care costs have been stable since 2012, and that's from the result of the phase-out of retiree health care. We've had benefit reforms and health care cost controls that have been put into place. There's almost $100 million worth of savings within our health care costs alone. We've changed the way that the city delivers certain services. For example, we've put garbage on a grid. You wouldn't think that was revolutionary, but it was made a big change in the city of Chicago. From those kinds of service changes, there are $25 million worth of savings. And then finally, we've scrutinized every line. We've looked at cell phones. We've looked at copiers. We've looked at office supplies. We've looked at duplicative services across departments. We've looked at duplicative actions within departments. All of that together has resulted in another $50 million worth of savings. And while the focus has been on savings and reforms, sustainable and targeted revenue growth has definitely been part of the package. We've looked to eliminate outdated tax exemptions, such as the amusement tax exemption on luxury skyboxes. So apologies to any of y'all with a luxury skybox. We've also worked to close tax loopholes, and we've looked to level the playing field between traditional services and new economy services, for example, imposing the hotel tax on Airbnb vacation rentals. You know, the other factor, not only has it been the new taxes or the new revenue sources, it's also been the growth in Chicago's economy. Our revenues continue to benefit from our strong economy, and key economically sensitive tax revenues have been increasing year over year over the last 5 years. Sales tax, personal property lease tax, hotel tax, amusement tax, income tax, all of those have seen regular growth over the years that's directly the result of Chicago's economy and the growth and the strength of our economy. Now, we are projecting a decline in our 2017 revenues. However, that's really due to some actions the state has taken and not about the fundamentals of Chicago. In fact, when I look at 2017, those key and those economically sensitive revenue sources are projected to grow. Sales tax is projected to be up 3% over the 2016 year end. Personal property lease tax is expected to be up 4.5% over the already strong growth we've seen in 2016. And our real property transfer tax is expected to be up another 4% over the 2016 budget. Really, by combining not just the growth, but our savings, our efficiencies, our service reforms, and the sustainable revenue growth that I've been talking about, we've managed to close our operating gap each year. But, you know, I think the thing about it is you have to keep in mind that we've done that while doing three other things. First, we've eliminated our reliance on one-time revenues. You know, those revenues that had historically balanced the budget, which were primarily from the sale or the concessions of certain city assets, such as the parking meters. We've eliminated that. In 2011, as you can see here, there was almost $570 million worth of one-time revenues that went into paying our basic bills. By 2016, that number is $40 million. That's 1% of our operating budget, and that comes primarily from things like TIF surplus. And it's an amount of money that I would expect to see in a budget of our size on an annual basis that would be kind of that would be one-time revenue on an annual basis. You know, the other thing is, too, is that we've actually been phasing out the use of bonds for certain operating expenses. The city has a long history of using long-term borrowing for short-term expenses, retroactive salary payments, library books, trees, fountain maintenance. The list goes on. Over the last 3 years, we have used more than $200 million worth of operating dollars to pay for those kinds of expenses, moving them off of long-term borrowing and putting them into the city's operating budget and continuing the path of having sustainable finances. And then I think, finally, the third factor, which really is probably the most important one, is that we have balanced the budget and reduced the structural deficit while adding resources. We're adding resources in basic services, citywide recycling, tree trimming, pothole filling crews. And we've also added resources to things that invest in our services that invest in our communities, such as increasing the amount of money available for early childhood education, or after school programming, or summer jobs. You know, for 2017, our approach will be very much the same as it has been for the last 5 years. It's going to be about aligning expenses and revenues, looking for those opportunities to cut, and looking for targeted revenue sources, while at the same time maintaining and enhancing those core and critical services to our neighborhoods. So when we think about the city's legacy financial liabilities, I tend to think about them in three buckets. We think about the structural deficit, which I just discussed. We think about the city's debt and debt management practices, and we also think about pensions. But we've also been making, and we've been making progress on all of them, and we've particularly been making progress on the second of these legacy liabilities, the city's debt and debt management practices. You know, in the spring of 2015, the mayor announced a roadmap to end unsustainable financial practices of the past and to eliminate hundreds of millions of dollars of risk to taxpayers. And we've delivered already on the first of those commitments that he made, which is to convert, and we have done that by converting all of the city's taxpayer-funded variable-rate debt to fixed-rate debt and terminating the swaps associated with them. You know, another critical component of the mayor's roadmap was the phase-out and a pure total elimination of scoop and toss. For those of you all who don't know, I'm guessing most people in the room do, but for those of you all who don't know, scoop and toss is a practice whereby the city borrows money to make current debt payments. It's really akin to borrowing money to make your mortgage payments. Practice that needs to end, and a practice that we are committed to phasing out over the by 2019. In 2016, we took the first step towards phasing out scoop and toss, and that first step in budgeting enough money to pay our debt instead of borrowing to make our debt payments. The 2016 budget decreases scoop and toss by $100 million. And by 2019, we will include another $300 million in our budget, enough to make all of our debt payments, and we will no longer borrow to pay the mortgage. But our focus hasn't only been... Thanks to Carol. So our focus hasn't only been on ending these risky and unsustainable financial practices. We've also been working to identify real and sustainable plan to address the city's four pension funds. In 2011, we faced sizable unfunded pension liabilities, and all four of our pension funds were on a path to insolvency somewhere between the next 5 and 15 years. Today, we have permanent recurring revenue sources for our police, fire, and labor's pension funds that put them on a track towards solvency. Last fall, we adopted a four-year, $540 million property tax increase dedicated to police and fire pensions. You know, the property tax increase is based on a funding plan which doubles the city's payments in 1 year and nearly triples them over a three-year time period. And then, beginning in 2020, the city moves to an actuarially funded payment structure for police and fire. And then these funds will be 90% funded by 2055. Now, turning to labor's and the labor's fund and the municipal fund, as you all might have heard, we had a little bit of a stumble there. Earlier this year, the Illinois Supreme Court struck down Senate Bill 1922. And Senate Bill 1922 was a piece of legislation that, for the first time, put the municipal and labor's fund required that the contributions from the city for the municipal and labor's fund were on an actuarially funded basis. It also included benefit reforms for employees and retirees so that residents and taxpayers didn't have to bear the full burden themselves. With the Illinois Supreme Court ruling on 1922, the funding guarantees went away, along with the benefit reforms, and it put these funds back on a path for insolvency. But, you know, our approach wasn't to sit around and wait to see what happens. We actually started working on a new solution immediately with our partners in labor. And as a result, in May of 2016, the city announced an agreement in principle on funding and benefit reforms for the labor's pension fund. The city will commit to increasing our payments over the next 5 years, and then in 2022, we're committing to go to contributions that are actuarially based. New hires, starting January 1, 2017, will pay 3% more towards their pensions, and assuring that the taxpayers do not have to bear the full burden in the future. People who were hired on January 1, 2011 have the option to pay 3% more and retire with their full pension benefits at age 65 instead of age 67. And then finally, the laborers fund will be 90% by 2057. To make these increased contributions, the city has dedicated the additional corporate fund revenue that is available from the increase of the 911 surcharge. And in fact, later this year, we're going to the General Assembly to ask for approval of this collaborative agreement. Now, similar to the shared path forward for laborers, we're working on a solution for the municipal fund, and a solution that we hope mirrors the plan that we've put forward for laborers. And we anticipate being able to announce a solution and a funding and benefit solution to the municipal fund in the coming weeks. The work that we've undertaken in the last 5 years, really to strengthen both our short-term and long-term financial health, has really impacted our ability to provide core city services. But it really does more than that. You know, as the mayor talked about, it does much more than that. Stable finances allow the Chicago's economy to continue to grow and to flourish, and they ensure that we're able to invest in things like after-school programs, repairing bridges, bike lanes, and helping to provide safer neighborhoods across the city. With each year, we've not only changed the trajectory of the current operating shortfall, but we've also made significant progress to close the gap in future years. In fact, in 2014, we projected that the city's 2017 budget operating shortfall would be nearly $600 million without fundamental changes to our finances and fundamental changes to the way we do business. Today, we're solving for a $137.6 million gap. Now, I'm not here to say that all of our work's done and that our financial challenges are all solved. But I do think it bears repeating, and it is true, that in every facet of the city's finances, from our pensions to our debt to our operating budget, that we're definitely heading in the right track. Thank you.
If you have questions, where's the Amanda? There she goes. Glad to see we have these blue forms. Well, here's one already typed up. Alex, this is not a sandbag, I'm sure. Wait a minute, this is a first. Two different people on the same type page. Mark this day down. We'll be revisiting this in 2055. Here we go. A little humor there. All right, Alex, you're up. John O'Connell, Premier Energy Auctions. What strategies does the City of Chicago undertake to avoid the tax volatility of the energy market, specifically focusing on utility budgets? Always good to start off with an easy question. There.
I guess this is the time when I could refer to some of my colleagues in the room and make them answer the questions. No, in all seriousness, the volatility of energy prices impacts the city in two ways. It impacts our revenue from utility taxes, but it also impacts us as a user of utility services. With respect to the utility taxes and the revenue that we get, I think probably referring to what's been happening to natural gas prices, and we have a gross receipts tax on natural gas, and so we've seen a lot of volatility, and the really kind of wacky weather hasn't helped us much either. We approach that by looking over years and trying to smooth out our revenue projections over a course of years so that we don't have any year which is particularly up or any year which is particularly down. You know, with respect to the cost side of the structure, the Department of Fleet and Facility Management, headed by David Reynolds and his team, have done an enormous amount of work to look at both energy efficiency, but also fuel hedging and energy hedging. All of that leads to stability in our prices. It doesn't mean that we're, you know, totally immune from the same impacts that other people have and that businesses have, but that we try to take the same strategies to mitigate any of those cost impacts.
Okay. Question two, same sheet. Here we go. Robert Parsons, assuming a $9 billion Chicago City budget, how much more would the budget need to make meaningful contribution to the underfunded pension plans? You kind of answered that, but...
A lot.
No.
And it's $9.6 billion, in case you wanted to know. That's really the issue that we've had around the unfunded liability for our pension funds, which is that we know there's significant unfunded liability there. We need to increase our payments. We need to be putting more towards these pension funds. But we want to do it in a way which is manageable for our taxpayers. We can't be in a situation where we're going to have a $550 or $600 million increase in our payments overnight. That has to come from someplace. It has to either come from increased taxes and revenues, or it has to come from service cuts. And so our approach has been to look at a sustainable plan, in particular for the three funds for which we have identified a stable and recurring revenue source. We're ramping up our payments over a five-year period and then moving to actuarial funding, at which point the amounts of money that we're going to need each year are going to be manageable and should be something that we can manage within the context of our budget.
Wouldn't it be great if I could say, and at the end of this, there's going to be a quiz? Be tremendous. All right. Richard Ciccarone, is that Ciccarone? Merit Research Services. The official thing. Need some penmanship. What are the city's plans relative to addressing violent crime in the city? Obviously right up your alley. Are more policemen part of the financial, built into the financial plan? There you go.
I don't think I see the police superintendent anywhere here, because otherwise I would definitely punt this question. It is, as you noted, a little bit out of my bailiwick. The thing that I think about in the work that the budget office does and the team in the budget office does is to think about how we support departments and what they need. They and the mayor have to make the policy decisions about what's necessary to achieve, increased safety in our communities, or how do we want to deal with and support people who are homeless in the city? What do we want to do about, bike lanes and potholes and tree trimming and all of those things? It's our job to go and look for all the opportunities to save money, all the opportunities to find efficiencies, and to do that within the context of knowing that there are going to be additional resources that are needed for a variety of services and for a variety of activities. One thing we did in the police department this year was the police department went through and identified every police officer who was in a job that didn't require a badge and a gun. If they didn't require a badge and a gun, then we put into place a civilian position to take that duty to send that police officer back on the street. And that's been part of our ongoing process throughout the city, but particularly within the police department, to make sure that the resources that they have and the police officers that they have are doing the job that they're supposed to be doing, which is protecting our city.
Knock it out of the park. Okay, we have a final question. By the way, very, very good answer. This is from Ed Mazur, who we saved for last, board member and noted sandbagger. Here we go. You have described the strengths and opportunities from a financial perspective. Congratulations. That's from Ed Mazur. Now, the sandbag. What are the potential weaknesses and threats to this stability? Last question. You could take a mulligan if you like.
Can I just say none? you know, I think there are weaknesses and our issues, I should say, in every budget and in any government's finances, particularly when you have revenues that can be economically or that are economically sensitive and vary with the economy. And there are also issues with respect to cost. I mean, the same kinds of cost impacts that a private business or somebody else might affect. You know, we talked about utility taxes earlier. Fuel prices are also another big one for us. They're all of those things that go into the process each year, and that as we look through, we have to find a way to essentially hedge those risks. We have to find a way to build a cushion, and to build that cushion for the time when the revenues maybe aren't as strong as they have been, or we have an unexpected expense. And that's actually been one of the activities that we've been undertaking as well, is building up that fund balance, having those revenues available, so to the extent that we face something unexpected, we're in a good position to manage it.
Very good. Give a round of applause. Parting gift.